Well, good morning to you. Good morning. Good morning. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and Gil and I think we have the technical issues all under control. So if we can make it through this two-hour show without falling on our face, then we have hit a home run. There is a certain button that somebody needs to push on a regular basis. And so Gil has raised his hand and said, I'll get here a minute early and reset this. And so far, last week went good, and hopefully this week will work well as well. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We have five lines. One of them's busy right now. Four of them are available. If you have a car question or a car problem or a car argument with your husband or your wife or your kids or your best buddy, then we're pretty good at setting that kind of stuff straight. Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing's been in Mesa since 1970, and he's the only Mesa shop I can recommend. You see, I insist on somebody being there for a very long time and paying their bills on time and having ASE-certified technicians and stuff like that. There are shops in all parts of the valley that change hands every couple of years. Those aren't the ones I'm looking for. I'm looking for the people that have been around, and Thompson's has been around since 1970. So if you're in Mesa, Thompson's Auto Repair at Main Street and Stapley is the place I think that you should try. If you don't already have a shop, and assuming that you're happy with your shop, then you should stay there. But if you're not, or if you're still looking, then Thompson's Auto Repair is a good place. Martin's Auto, you know what? Let me take John real quick, because John just chimed in. John, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Good morning, sir. Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I have a problem. I took my car to, it's a 1986 Pontiac Fiero. I bought it for like $5,000 from my son, and it was running, but it needed to be fine-tuned. So I took it finally to this repair shop. Am I allowed to say the name or not?
Not if you're going to say anything bad. You're not. I don't want you to say the name.
No, I'm saying, I just wanted to, well, I took it to a Tempe repair shop.
Okay.
And what happened is that he was supposed to give me the cost, how much it cost me to repair the car. I signed the form, I just put my name and address. Unknowingly, he calls this a, there's no date, there's no dollar amount, there's nothing in there. To make a long story short, he calls me after numerous times, attempts that I try to get an estimate. He never provided an estimate. So he took it upon himself to repair this car without authorization from me. Then, yeah, go ahead. He presented to me a bill over $7,000. I was forced to pay because otherwise he was filing the car, and I wanted my son to get a car to drive. Well, come to find out, the car is badly repaired, okay? So, long story short, I cannot find anywhere on a state law regarding...
John, stop. John, we already had this conversation on the internet. There is no law. There's two kinds of laws in the state of the Arizona. There's civil law and there's criminal law. Criminal law is Title 13, and that deals with armed robbery and beating your wife up and stuff like that. So there is no law. You're looking for a law that says that he has to give you an estimate. It ain't there, John. It isn't there. Here's what you do. First of all, did you pay with a credit card?
No, sir. I paid with a... that's another thing that he told me, that if I paid with a credit card, he's going to charge me another 3% or 5%, whatever it was.
Okay.
So...
Okay. Just a yes or no answer is good. John, you got no, I was going to say stop payment on a credit card, but you just signed he eliminated you being able to do that, because you can contact Visa, MasterCharge, Discover and say, I want to put this charge in dispute. They put it in dispute. Both of you begin to negotiate and finally you come to some kind of an agreement or whatever. If I were you, I would file a Better Business Bureau complaint. And, John, leave out all the superfluous stuff. I took my car in on this date. This is what happened. This is what he said. This is what he did. Here's a copy of my payment. And then here's a copy of another receipt from another shop with problems that he's created or problems he hasn't fixed. That's what needs to happen. So you can file a complaint with the Attorney General's Office, the Consumer Fraud Division. Too bad you didn't pay with a credit card. You can file a complaint with the Better Business Bureau. And just be short, be concise, tell the story quickly, forget all the superfluous stuff, stick to the facts. But again, there is no law in the state of Arizona that he broke. you broke consumer laws that talk about the consumer has a responsibility to have a good communication and an open communication line with the customer. And then you, of course, then when you had the chance to pay with a credit card, somehow or another you decided to pay with cash or something like that. So there's lots of problems here, but there's just no magic wand that's going to fix this. And, I don't know what to say. If you would have called 10 of my friends that own shop and said, should I spend $7,000 on a 1986 Fiero, you'd have got 10 no's. But I understand that you didn't get the chance to authorize the estimate. You just dropped your car off, and then all of a sudden he did the work. So I don't know anything about, I mean, I've been involved in this a very long time. I was one of the founding members of the Better Business Bureau Consumer Arbitration Board. I served on that board as chairman for and the Auto Advisory Committee Board. You can file it there. Those guys would give you a good fair shake. So you'd file a complaint with the Better Business Bureau and ask to be sent to the Auto Advisory Committee. And those guys there, which many are friends of mine and some I don't know, they're going to go through. They're going to see what's going on. But what you're missing is something in writing from another shop that says that this portion of this $7,000 worth of work, here's, let me discuss that in writing. Number one, he said he put a new radiator in it. No, he didn't. And I'm just hypothesizing here. So you need another shop to do that. And I can't be your shop. So I'm sorry, John. I thought we had covered a lot of this on email, but I guess we didn't. But anyway, that's the path I think you should go to. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960 if you have a car question or a car problem. I want to tell you a quick story about a shop that this dovetails nicely into the next story, Mark Salem's story. There's a guy that has a car and he's taken it to I don't know how many shops and nobody can fix it. Nobody can fix it, including my shop. So we get it, and we just, it's got a barrel problem, a barometer problem, and because the computer needs to see the barometric pressure, and it needs to see the moisture content of the air, and it needs to see how hot it is, and all that kind of stuff. Well, this barrel's missing. This barrel number is out of sequence. This barrel number is going crazy. We've never seen that before. So he spends hundreds and hundreds of dollars at a whole bunch of shops, and nobody can find or fix this. Now, let me tell you that he has a cold air kit on this car. A cold air kit is this. We know that cold air carries more fuel. So if you want a little bit more power, the engine should inhale cold air, and it's not going to get the cold air from underneath the hood because all the air underneath the hood is hot. So cold air carries more fuel, cold air is better for your motor, cold air is better for combustion, and therefore we have what we call cold air kits where we take the snorkel, the mouth of the engine, and we move it from inside the engine compartment to the grill area. So now when you're driving down the road, we're kind of shoving air, cold air I might say, into the mouth of the motor. So that's called a cold air kit. It's a hot rod thing. Everybody's got a cold air kit on their pickup trucks and their diesels and their cars and their hot rods and all that kind of stuff. There is merit to it, but I've been on a dynamometer with a variety of cars, and it's a measurable amount, but it's like an eyelash. It's just not much. So this guy has a barrel problem. We pass. We say we are not the best ones for this. So he takes it to Dave Martin's Auto. Dave Martin's Auto is a shop that's on my best car repair shops list. So Dave calls me and he says, hey, read me the work order. So I read him the work order and I said, we've never seen a barrel problem before. Never seen it. He says, well, okay. So then he calls me back and he goes, I got it. And I said, you're kidding. He says, here's the deal. We notice that he has a cold air kit on this. So we look at it and it's a brand we've never seen before. So we get on the internet, type, and we look and we find this cold air kit. But in this cold air kit, there is two tubes between the grill and the mouth of the motor. There's an outer tube and an inner tube. And he says, and when we took it apart to look at it, there is no inner tube. So we called the manufacturer of this cold air kit, and we said, hey, da-da-da-da-da. And he goes, oh, no, you got to have that middle tube in there. The inside tube has to be in there. And they said, well, it's not here. And they go, hey, we'll just send you a new one. So the manufacturer sent the small tube that goes inside the big tube. They put it on, car's fixed. Just fixed. So then Dave calls the customer and says, here's what happened, and here's what we found, and we put this new tube in the middle, and he says, and that's why, and we fixed your problem. You have no more check engine light. You have no more barrel codes. You don't have anything. The thing runs like a raped ape. Everything is fine. And the guy goes, do you know how much money I've spent at a whole bunch of shops looking for this problem? And Dave says, I kind of have a feeling. And he goes, I've spent hundreds, if not thousands of dollars trying to get this problem fixed. Dave says, I'm telling you, it's fixed. So he says, this is the customer now. The customer says, well, there was a time where the cold air kit fell off and there was a tube that was broken. And so I just threw the tube away and I put the rest of it all together. I can't blame the customer because I've never seen a double tube on the snorkel of a cold air kit. But anyway, Dave Martin gets my total adoration. I just admire the heck out of him. But the path they took was one of, well, look at, we've never seen this before. What brand is it? Then they go on the internet, then they look and they go, hey, wait a minute, there's a tube missing here. Then they call the manufacturer. He's a good guy. He says, I'll send you one. So at the end of the day, somebody takes it and looks at this repair from a different point. Now, I want to tell you something. There's not one of you guys out there in the whole wide world that would have been able to fix this car with a scanner or pinpoint tests or analyzation of the data in or analyzation of the data out. There's not one of you, not one of me, not anybody that would have fixed this thing by looking at the serial stream data. Or no matter what kind of scanner you have, what kind of processor you have, because I thought that we needed to reload factory software back in this because I thought the barrel somehow had come disconnected. I can't explain the situation. I can only give Dave Martin from Martin's Auto an attaboy of the king size style because he fixed this car when maybe four or six or maybe even eight other shops couldn't do it. And so Dave Martin's Auto, 16th Street, good guy. And if you got a problem and your car makes monkey noises on Thursday mornings at 10 o'clock in the morning, Dave can fix it. 602-508-0960. One more time, 602-508-0960, and we'll be right back. 20 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, my name is Mark Salem, and we're here until 12 noon talking about car and car repair issues. We're going to get to Jane in just a second or two. John was my first caller. John, I'd like you to send me another email, and I want to have one short conversation with you to give you some more guidance. And so mark@marksalem.com, mark@marksalem.com, and I'm going to send you in slightly a different direction, but you can do that after we get done with the radio show, and I'll do my best. If you'll leave your phone number there, I'll call you back. Anyway, Jane, good morning. Thank you for holding. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark. Yes, I have a 10-year-old Buick Enclave, 2012. And it runs great. The only thing I've ever done to it is have an oil change. And I and my sister are going to California and just want to make sure that I want to get it checked out.
Okay. How many miles are on it now?
Yeah. And so, I mean, it has about 70,000 miles on it. And I just need to know, is it a good idea to take it that far? And then I'll be going to Sedona after that. And just want to know what you think.
Well, during the oil changes that you've had in the last 70,000 miles, did you just go in and did you just get an oil filter change, lubrication, check the tires and the fluids, and say thank you and goodbye? Or were you sold additional services in your oil changes up to now, which is 70,000 miles?
No. It's just the oil change at Jiffy Lube, and then, that's about it.
Okay, so Jiffy Lube didn't sell you tire rotations, didn't sell you any brakes, didn't sell you any liquid flushes, cooling system flushes, transmission flushes, differential flushes. They didn't do any of that. You just took it in, got an oil change, and said thank you.
Basically, yes, but I have had new tires, and, I have bought new tires, and basically that was
it. Okay, I'm kind of concerned because it's a 2012, which is going to be, it's 10 years old. I think what you need, what part of town do you live in?
In Scottsdale.
Okay, north or south?
North.
Okay, I'd probably go up to Blackwell Auto. He's on 40th and Greenway. Talk to Aaron and get an appointment for a trip check over. You're leaving on a trip. You have 70,000 miles on a 10-year-old car. You've had oil changes on a regular basis, but you'd like to know if they see anything that they wouldn't let their grandkids go with you.
Or their grandmother.
There you go. There you go. I'll take that. So I'm a little concerned because there's going to be some stuff in your owner's manual that you should have had accomplished, and many of it is not the breakdown, I'm in trouble kind of problem, okay? So I don't think there's any fluid changes that you skipped over. I wish, and you just got new tires, and I know if you bought tires, they probably checked your brakes, and that's good, or they would have said something. And so there's lots of moving parts, but if you were going to take my grandkids, I'd want to check all the fluids, the belts, the hoses. I'd want to check the spare. I'd want to look at the brakes. I'd want to look at everything just to make sure that you're going to go over there and come back and there's nothing obviously wrong. There's no leaks. There's no hoses that are swelled up. There's no power steering rack leaking out of one of the boots. All that kind of stuff I would want to do. And Blackwell, and what you're asking for is I'm taking a 70,000-mile car, a 10-year-old car, to California, and I want to make sure that there's nothing obvious that I should have fixed before I left. Thank you very much. Okay?
Right. And going up and down the hills, going to Sedona also.
Yeah, I'm not real concerned about that, but I'm the 10-year-old car bothers me because there's not going to be any wear things there, okay? In 70,000 miles, we're not going to wear out anything. But the thing of it is there's going to be seeping and leaking and a little bit of this and a little bit of that. And there's going to be some obvious signs there. When you start it up in the morning, you may not notice, but the shop says, well, there's a little bit of a... instead of a... And so they go, wait, that goes away real quick. Then they look down the throttle blades and they go, oh, my gosh, the throttle blades are filthy, which is a $50 repair. You're done. So those are the kinds of things that I think you should have. Okay.
All right. So this is Blackwell's, and who did you say I should ask for?
Ask for Aaron. He's the service manager, and tell him that Mark Salem sent you, and that he said that he wanted his dollar bill in a certified funds.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you. I appreciate that. No. I'm sure that will help our little trip. So.
It will. He'll do a good job. You just tell him I'm taking young people, and I'm a grandma, and I'm taking them to California, and I want you to. I don't expect you to tell me that I'm going to have a blowout 110 miles down the road, but I just want you to look for problem areas that we can correct right now. And he understands that.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
All right. You sent me. All right. Thank you so much, Mark.
You're welcome.
Happy New Year.
And to you too, ma'am. Thank you. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. And car repair, see, the problem with car repair today is in the old days, we got to give you a hug and a kiss every 3,000 miles. We could sell you something every 3,000 miles, a tire rotation every 3,000 or every 6,000. We got to sell you a flush at 30. We got to flush everything in your car of a liquid at 30. Today it's different. Today everything's 100,000 miles. So all those flushes disappeared. So I can't flush your cooling system at 30, 60, and 90. I really need to do it at 100. So those are the issues. So now what's happening is when you take your car in for repair, they're giving you a laundry list of stuff. Well, we need to clean your mass airflow sensor. We need to decarbonize your engine. We need to flush your power steering system. Outer tie rod ends are loose. They don't say how loose because all of them are loose. Even new ones are loose. They'll move the thickness of the piece of paper. That's okay. We don't care. When the tie rod starts clanking, when you turn the steering wheel left and right and you feel a thump, it could be that the sway bar bushings are bad. It could be the tie rod end bushings or the tie rod ends are bad. There's a lot of things it could be. I don't want you to think you can go 100,000 miles with just oil changes. I think that's a risk you don't need to take. I think, on the other hand, when you take your car into a lot of shops in town, they're going to give you a laundry list of stuff that does not appear in your owner's manual. They're going to tell you that you, and it's called feel good stuff. Oh, your transmission needs to be serviced. We need to flush your brake system. We need to flush your cooling system, and we need to flush your injectors. Mark Salem's word for that is they're flushing your wallet. That's what they're doing. Because what you should say is simple this. You say, well, what symptom do I have that you're going to correct with flushing my injectors? That is a great question. That is a great question. What symptom do you have? Do I have now you're going to fix by flushing my brake fluid? What symptom do I have that you're going to flush my cooling system? What are you going to fix? And if you flush my differential or my transfer case, what are you going to fix? They're not going to have an answer. But there is an answer where you say, Mrs. Jones, I'm going to flush your injectors because when you started up first thing in the morning like we did, it rocked and rolled for about 5-10 seconds. And then finally it kind of smoothed out. And then 2 or 3 minutes later, it finally smoothed out. I'm going to clean your throttle blades and I'm going to flush your injectors. I'll get it one way or the other. That's the kind of conversation you're going to have. So it's right now, if you go by the owner's manual, you don't spend a whole lot of money at my shop for the first 100,000 miles except oil changes and tire rotations and maybe a brake job somewhere along the line. Suspension parts. They'll sell you all kinds of steering suspension parts, but I want to promise you something. Every single one of them that's defective has a symptom. And if you don't have any knocking when you turn left or right or when you hit a bump, if you don't have any play where you turn the steering wheel but the car keeps going straight and you move your steering wheel to the right 3 inches, to the left 3 inches, and it still goes straight down the road, that's play. We don't want that. So those are the kinds of issues you have. And our industry doesn't make it better for you, but if you go to MarkSalem.com, I have a list of the best car repair shops in town, and none of us play these stupid games. We look at your car. We bring you out of the lobby. We say, look at this. Look how this joint doesn't move in synchronization, but this joint does. So when I push on A, B moves with it. B, A, A, B, B. They move. Over here, I push on A, B doesn't move. I push on A a little bit more, now B moves. See the play right there? That's a tie rod end. See how the top kind of moves and the bottom doesn't? Look over here on this side. Look how they both move in synchronization. That's the dog and pony show. That's what shops do if they know how to do it. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. We're going to take about a 3-minute break here in about 6 seconds, and then we're going to take your call, 602-508-0960. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour, 10 o'clock. When it comes to diesels, a place called Strictly Diesels tells you all you need to know. Nate knows Chevy, Ford, and Dodge diesels like no one else. He's really good at what he does, and when you meet him and shake his hand, first of all, he's about 10 feet tall, and his hands look like tennis rackets. He's one of the nicest guys I've ever met, and he is so skilled in talking with customers about the symptoms and the repairs and stuff like that. So he's at I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road in North Phoenix, Strictly Diesel Service and Repair. And I got a secret to tell you. If your wife's gasoline car needs an oil change, he'll probably do that for you too, in spite of the fact his name is Strictly Diesel Service and Repair. We're only taking phone calls from people today that have 3 letters or 4 letters in their name. So Tom, you're up next. Don or Dan, you stay right there. But Tom, go ahead.
Thanks. I got a high idle problem with my 3.8 GM V6 engine. I've done a lot of work on it over the years. A couple years ago, I replaced the lower intake manifold gaskets.
Hold on. Let me ask questions, okay? Do you have any codes?
One.
What is it?
T0507.
What's the name of it?
Idle speed high.
Okay. All right, on a fuel-injected car, when we control the idle with air, so the idle air control motor, IAC, idle air control motor, is commanded to open and close this big orifice, this big tunnel of air. And so if it wants to drop the idle, it shuts off the idle air control motor, which brings the idle down, and then it opens it up, and that brings the idle up. If you have a vacuum leak somewhere, the vacuum leak will really confuse the computer. And the computer will go crazy trying to figure out how come it can't control the idle, but there's air being ingested by this vacuum line that came off. So someone has to find the vacuum source. And we have...
So...
Go ahead.
I looked through... I sprayed carb cleaner all around to see if there's a change in idle. I actually disconnected the idle air control valve cable and extended it out so it was going to shut that port off to close the door, per se, make sure that wasn't open to let more air in. And I just wonder, could the plastic plenum intake be cracked internally?
I thought you said you sprayed it with carb cleaner and propane.
No, on the outside. And then I didn't notice all around the vacuum lines. I didn't notice any change in idle.
Okay. Okay, well, it's going to be an external leak. It's not going to be an internal leak. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
It's going to, I don't know about the test that you did with the idle air control motor, because that's nothing that we do on at all. We may have when we were first starting with, idle air control motors and stuff. But the computer does control the idle air control motor and its steps. And if you had a scanner, you'd plug in the scanner and you'd create a problem where you wanted a high idle, and maybe you'd tell it the engine is 40 below zero, and then the idle air control motor would be commanded to open up and bring the RPMs up. That's what we'd want to see. That's part of the diagnostics, is we want to be able to see what drops it and what brings it up. It could be the plenum gasket at the bottom between the throttle body and the intake manifold. It can be the brake vacuum booster. It can be a vacuum line on one of the emissions control devices where we're sucking the fumes off the tank. So you've got a lot, and you got cruise control issues. You're using vacuum to apply and disengage the cruise control modules. So you got all this going on. I can't tell you what it is. I can only tell you that you have an unmetered amount of air going into the engine, and somebody has to find that. That's all I can tell you.
Could it be the mass airflow sensor saying, hey, there's no air? No,
because the mass airflow sensor just tells the engine how much you're bringing in through it. So as you open up the throttle, the computer sees the TPS saying, the throttle position sensor says, hey, he just went, let's pretend it's from 0 to 100. He just went to 20. And so the computer goes, 20. So it dials up fuel pressure. It tells the injectors to start following the RPM. It adds air. It adds timing. This happens in the blink of an eye. So the mass airflow and the mass airflow sensor will almost always set a code. But it could be an air leak behind the mass airflow sensor, between where the mass airflow sensor is and the mouth of the intake. But you said you sprayed that down.
I sprayed, carbon cleaner all around the intake and the intake throttle body gasket and the intake gasket, because last time I had a leak on the lower intake manifold and spraying fluid down there. I could see, and actually putting water down there.
Okay, I gotta run, but do this. Get a piece of 3 feet long heater hose, like 3/4 inch heater hose, and then put one in your ear and start waving that thing around the engine as it's idling, and cover the entire top of the engine. Go over to the cruise control servo, go to the EGR valve, go to the brake booster. You'll hear a vacuum leak if you use a piece of heater hose up against your ear. So that might be the only thing. But I want to tell you something. On a scale of 1 to 10, this is a 3 for anybody that works on cars for a living. It isn't that big of a deal. So you can continue to do this. What part of town do you live in?
Tucson.
I would call Jerry Simons Automotive. I've known Jerry for 30 years. I'm not quite sure he'd take this. I do know that there's a guy in Fort Huachuca area. There's a performance shop in Fort Huachuca area that would have no problem with this at all, but you're probably a little ways away from there, especially if you live in the north half of Tucson. So if you want his information, Mark at MarkSalem.com, Mark at MarkSalem.com, and I'll put you in touch with him. But call Jerry and say, if you do performance work and can you find a vacuum leak that's causing my idle to go crazy, is that something you want to do? And he says, oh, yeah, we can do that. Boom, you're done. Jerry Simons. It's called Jerry Simons 4x4 or Auto Repair. I don't remember which.
Okay, Jerry Simons. Got it. Hey, last question. Could the purge solenoid cause this valve?
Well, you're missing a purge solenoid code. So in order for this to be part of the problem, there would have to be some broken line or the purge valve's not working or whatever, and that would set its own code. So you're making this out much different than it really is. This isn't that big of a deal. It really isn't that big of a deal. So on a 1 to 10, it's a 3 or 4 at the most. It's not a 9 or a 10 diagnostics. There's old gray-haired guys out there that are going to find this with no problem. But I got to run. Dan, I'm sorry, I'm going to get to you, but I got to take a break. And anybody else, 602-508-0960. Dan's first, and you can be second. We'll be back. You know, some of these shop owners that I tell you about, I've known for quite a few years. Action Auto Repair, Tom, at I-17 in Deer Valley, him and I have been friends since 1983. We met when he was selling and demonstrating those giant boxes that cost $40,000, and it was called a scope. And then you customers decided, and it's okay, I'm historically speaking, the customer would say, put it on the scope, thinking that the scope's going to tell us what's wrong with the car. No, the scope forced us into a program, and the program kind of said, you got a problem, it's running rich, you need to find it, and here's the five things that typically cause this car to run rich. So it wasn't really that the scope would tell us how to fix it. It would guide us, and we learned a lot in the 80s and the 90s with scopes. My first house was $33,000. The scope I bought was $42,000, and I thought my wife was going to divorce me. Anyway, let's go to Dan. Dan, thank you for holding. How can I help you?
All right, I'll try to explain as I can.
Okay.
My 77 Dodge with the 440, pardon me, only at takeoff once in a great while, it'll cut out, snap back on, and sounds like a backfire from under the hood.
Okay. It's got to be electrical. It's got to be a cap, rotor, and coil.
And only at takeoff, not driving or anything.
Okay. Well, that's the load part. You know, when you're sitting there idling at a traffic light, yeah, and then all of a sudden you want to move 4,000 pounds, you know, you go into the throttle kind of deep. You're not wide open throttle by any means. But
no, very little.
It's not going to be a fuel-related problem because the fuel would, if you have a substandard flow of fuel to the carburetor, to the engine, then you're going to run out of fuel at 49 miles an hour, and it's going to fall on its face at 52 sure. miles an hour. And so sure. And the backfire means that we got spark going someplace it really shouldn't be going. Have you replaced the cap? Did you look at the rotor?
I've been to Harker's without. Parker's takes care of it, and it's been running like a top. I'd call them now, but, you know, they're off. So everything's really in good shape. Runs great.
Okay. It's just on a 1 to 10 scale for
I'm
Harker's.
I'm going to go see them.
Yeah. When Harker's, on a 1 to 10 scale, this is a 3 or a 4 between Bob and his and his nephew. This is really nothing. It could be a cap. It could be a rotor. It could be a coil wire. It could be something that's arcing inside the cap. It could be another thing you could do is disconnect cool. the vacuum advance, put a cool. golf tee or a pencil in the rubber line, go drive it, and you say, wow, it goes away. Now we know it's the pickup assembly and the distributor. And so those are the kinds of things we do. But if you're going to Harker's on a 1 to 10 scale, they're an 11. They'll find it.
Okay to drive it?
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't know how explosive this is. I mean, when it backfires, is it backfiring through the carburetor or through the exhaust?
It's not the exhaust. It's under the hood, so okay, it must be carburetor, I guess.
Yeah. I just don't want you to blow the air cleaner off of it. I don't want you to blow a bunch of gasoline into the air cleaner and catch it on fire. You know what I'm saying? So just behave yourself, and I sure. wouldn't go on to Central Avenue tonight and think you're going to whip on those kids with the Toyotas, okay?
It's just once in a while, and maybe happens only twice in one day. So what the heck?
I think an inspection of the distributor would be the first place I would look. I would look for the rotor. I'd look for the tangs. I'd look for the coil wire. The distributor would be center of where my attention would be, and I'm quite sure they'll be the same thing. So, and then you tell Ellen when you take
MSD, I wouldn't know where to look.
Yeah, well, you tell them when you talk to Ellen at the front counter. Said Mark Salem says you don't have a prayer in hell of finding and fixing this problem. And that will.
Oh, I can do that.
That'll really I'll get a call from them.
You know, they don't need any motor.
I know.
Don't need any motivation. They're just great.
I know. All right, got to go. But thank you, Dan. Thank you very much. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Harker's is a good place. Been around since 1967. And Bob and Ellen. Ellen runs the front. Bob runs the back. And I could spend the rest of the hour and a half I have here on the radio talking about all the cars they fix that nobody else could fix. Really and truly, if there's 10 good shops in Phoenix that can really, really do a good job, there's no question he's in that 10. There's no question he's in that 10. And here's the difference. The difference really has to do with this. Many of us old guys in our 60s and our 70s came up with points and condensers. And then we went to electronic ignition, we went to fuel injection, and we went through EGR valves, we went to vehicle emissions, we went to CO, HC, NOx, and oxygen. We went through all of that, so we have a fundamental knowledge of what needs to happen in order for the car to go run, run. We know that. Spark, fuel, compression, all that stuff. There's a lot of us out there. There's 20 of my friends that are north of 55 years old. We've all been, since we were in high school, we've all been working on cars. We started at gas stations or Discount Tire or something like that. And we've morphed into ASE Master Certified Technicians that are that have been certified in every aspect of the car from front to back except body and paint. That's a separate test. But when you're an ASE master, you've covered everything. Transmissions, differentials, fuel systems, ignition systems, electrical systems, front ends, suspension, transfer cases, differentials, all that stuff. And I am a master tech. And I've been a master tech for a very long time. So I've passed all 8 tests numerous times. So 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open if you have a car question or a car problem. 602-508-0960. And if you're a technician looking for a job, we're looking for a technician. And if you're interested in if we're in the Tempe area, so if you're interested in, and we have a Monday through Friday kind of calendar, and we've been in business for in that location since 1994, and then in a previous location that was a couple miles away for another 5 years before that, so probably in the 88 we've been in business in that area. So if you're looking for a job or you want to explore, then just take a look at Salem Boys and stop by and drop an application off and talk to Andy or Alan, and they'd like to talk to you. If you're a service rider, the same thing. If you're a service rider and you're looking around and maybe you want weekends off, that might be something that's attractive, so you can do that as well. If you have a car question, now's the time to call in, 602-508-0960. I'm looking at the stupid numbers again. 602-508-0960. I'll give it to you again. 602-508-0960. We have 5 lines. None of them are taken right now. So if you call in, we'll get you as quickly as you can. We were making a joke earlier because all of our callers had either 4 letters or 3 letters in their names, and we made a joke about you had to have 3 or 4 letters. That's not true. So if your name is Everell, if your name is Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious, we'll still take your call, and Gil will answer the phone, and he'll say, can I help you? And at that particular point, you can say, I'd like to talk to Mark, and he'll say, what's your name? And then he's going to whisper in my ear that Supercalifragilistic is on the phone. And that's kind of how it works, just like he did right there. He ran the air gun this time. Who's on the phone?
It's not supercalifragilistic. It's Jack. Say hello to Jack.
Jack. Jackie says it's super didn't call yet. It's just Jack. But anyway, go ahead, Jack.
I got a question. Do you guys recommend using STP oil treatment for vehicles?
Under certain circumstances, the answer is yes. But if you think that you're going to put STP in your car and your car motor is going to love you and last forever, that's not a valid reason to use any oil additive. Let me tell you, I've been trained by Chevron and Valvoline, so I'm considered an oil expert. When you use an aftermarket additive, you throw the original oil out of specification. But I think, if I can be so bold, can I change your question? What are the circumstances that you would use STP oil treatment in your car or your transmission or your differential? There's a lot of them. If I had an older model car and I had an oil consumption problem and I was using like a 30 weight, not a 1030, but just a straight 30 weight, I'd probably add a pint of STP to it. That's going to raise the viscosity. That's going to thicken the oil up just a little bit. That's going to help control oil consumption. If I've got a spark plug in number 7 that keeps fouling, a can of STP is likely to double that spark plug's life. STP doesn't provide any kind of super, you know, coverage or protection for your engine. It just thickens up the oil. And the viscosity of the oil, we want the oil to be thin, like sewing machine oil, when it's cold in the morning when we start the car, because we can't pump peanut butter. and we need to get the oil into caverns that are the thickness of a human hair, 2 3/1000ths of an inch. And we can't do that with peanut butter. So, yes, there are times that we put STP. Now, I'll tell you something else. We put STP every once in a while, once a year maybe, in a differential. Sometimes we'll put it in a manual transmission. Sometimes we'll put it in a front differential or a rear differential. But typically you're using an 80 or 90 or an 80, 140 weight in the differentials, but STP is just a viscosity enhancer. It makes it a little thicker, more peanut buttery. So if you're dealing with oil leaks, STP might be something that you would try to see if it made a significant difference. But those are the parameters I would use it in.
Okay. And that's one of the things that I'm having is I have a Volkswagen that every 1,000 miles uses a half a quart of oil. And it probably has about 150,000 miles on it.
And let's talk about that. This Volkswagen is an air-cooled motor. It doesn't have a cooling system. It's well known for leaking oil like a sieve. and so what oil are you putting in it? And then you're putting STP. Are you putting like a 1030 or a 30 weight? Or what are you putting in it at the beginning?
A 530.
Oh, no, I'd get away from that. That's part of your problem.
Okay.
A 5 weight flows like a 5 weight when it's cold and flows like a 30 weight when it's hot. I think if you put straight 30 weight in there or straight 40 weight in there, I mean, you could even go to a straight 50 weight, and I think you could better control the oil leak that way than any other way. Your 530, your 520 and 530, that's what we put in brand new cars of today that have tolerances the size of half of a human hair. And we also know that we're going to get better fuel economy with a 520 or a 530 because it's not so much peanut butter in the engine, but you don't care about fuel economy on your Volkswagen. So if you're just trying to control oil, just put a straight 30 or a straight 40 or even a straight 50 weight in there. There's no way you're going to starve that oil or that engine of oil when you start it up in the morning because it's got there's no way that's going to happen. So you can be sure that that's okay.
Okay. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. SCP is a viscosity enhancer. It's like honey. And so it's got the consistency of cold honey that you get out of your refrigerator and you put on your pancakes or whatever. You thicken up the oil. It doesn't flow because we want the oil to get into areas that are about the thickness of a human hair. So we can't have too much peanut butter in there. So we need oil to get into these areas with 3/1000ths that's tolerance, 4/1000ths tolerance. And a human hair is 3 to 4/1000ths thick. So we can't shove peanut butter in there and expect it to do a really good job. But his Volkswagen is an older model. The technology is from the 50s, 60s, and 70s. We know that it's an air-cooled motor. We know that it has big tolerances already. And his oil leaking is exasperated by the fact that he's putting sewing machine oil in there, which is like a 10 or a 20 or a 30 weight oil. So I'm just asking him, let's go a little thicker. Let's put a little bit of honey in there instead of water. That's a good analogy. He's using water and he's leaking, and I'm saying let's put some honey in there and that'll control the leak a little bit better.
1 minute.
602-508-0960, and we're going to come back and do another hour, so if you called in now, you might have to wait until about 3 or 4 minutes after the hour of 11, but we'll still take your call if you want to join us. 602-508-0960. Gil is the one that answers the phone, so be nice to him. And he's going to say, do you want to talk to Mark? And you can say stuff like my friends say, no, I want to talk to Santa Claus. I want to talk to the owner of the station because he's wrong about this. Or whatever you want to do is okay with me. 602-508-0960. My email address is mark@marksalem.com. mark@marksalem.com. And if you expect an answer, put your phone number in there because I'm probably going to call you from my blocked phone. And the first thing that I say when you answer the phone, you say, hello. I say, this is Mark Salem. I'm calling you back so that you don't hang up on me. But I'm calling from a blocked number for obvious reasons. But if you want a written response, that's fine. Don't put your phone number in there, and I'll give you a written response. Once again, 602-508-0960. Got 5 lines open. Roll that to my- Well, welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. I'm going to take care of some business, and then we're going to get to the calls. We have two open lines. We've got three already taken, 602-508-0960. If you have a car question or if there's an argument in your family that you want somebody to chime in on, as long as you fairly explain both sides of the issue, I'll chime in and take one side or the other. Automatic Transmission Exchange is one of the best transmission shops in town, if not the best. He's been around since 1968. Phil and his staff are transmission diagnostic experts. It's okay for you to call them, make an appointment. As long as you can make the problem happen, they'll take a ride with you. But what you can't do is take one of their technicians on a three-hour jaunt through the downtown Phoenix trying to get something that happens only on Thursday afternoon at 3:12 p.m. So, Automatic Transmission Exchange, 40th Street in Washington, one of the best transmission shops I've ever been around in all my life. Stan, you're up first. How can I help you?
Hey, Mark, long time I know talk to you. I remember talking to you at the other place that other place used to be at, but been to your shop many times. Very impressed. I have an 09 Jeep Compass, four-wheel drive, 2.4 liter. This thing's got some really crazy electrical problems. It needed an O2 sensor, replaced an O2 sensor, and everything just went haywire after that.
Okay.
PTM, maybe?
Well, no, you just jumped from I have a fever to I need my brain, I needed a lobotomy. Let's just because it has an O2 sensor code, 9 times out of 10, it does not need another sensor. Let me explain. Everything in your car is 5 volts. 1 volt is low and 5 volts is high. So the O2 sensor simply tells the computer who controls the faucet of the fuel. It says, whoa, wait a minute, he says, you got the faucet open way too much, 4.5, and so the computer takes the faucets and starts shutting it down, and then the O2 sensor goes, 3, 2.5, 2.2, and then the computer goes, perfect, and it stops right there. This happens 10 times a second. So when the O2 sensor is squawking, everybody replaces the O2 sensor, but that actually fixes only about 10% of the problems. You got to go in and find the vacuum leak that's thrown the air-fuel mixture off. You got to go in and find out why you got too much fuel or not enough fuel, or too much air or not enough air. So it's really simple to figure that out if you have a scanner and you understand what the numbers mean. So if I open up and I plug into your scanner and the O2 sensor's sitting there at 4, then it's saying, give me more fuel. So then the question is, well, it's, oh, wait a minute, there's a big vacuum leak right over here on the purge valve. So I plug the purge valve, and then all of a sudden, the problem goes away. So the O2 sensor is seeing a vacuum leak, and so it sets the code because it says, I got the information from the O2 sensor. But really, the O2 sensor is the messenger, not the... So just...
Right.
It won't take much.
That makes perfect sense. This is not my first O2 sensor. This is probably like my second or third in the last 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
Of having the vehicle, so it hasn't been a lot of sense. Okay. So and then the other electrical issues that I'm having, just coincidental, or some really strange stuff, like the dash light flashing, almost like it's got a low battery condition. Almost, it's just. Strange things are occurring.
I think what we need to do is we need to go back and have you looking over our shoulder and show us what you unplugged, what you plugged in, what you did exactly. Go back through it, because yes, you have a bunch of problems that you didn't have before you replaced the O2 sensor. We need to back that train up back to the beginning. And then we need to start there and move forward. Do you have the old O2 sensor, or did you already toss it?
No, I do. I still have it.
Okay. That's what I would do if I were you. I'd put that big dog back in, take that other one back out, make sure you connected them right, and see how many problems you have left. But really and truly, many of the symptoms that you talked about are not related to the O2 sensor and the computer. So if you've got all kinds of weird things going on, then we've lost the ground. We've got power. We got an alternator running wild, running at 16, 17 volts. We've got a dead short somewhere in the system that's causing all kinds of dash lights to light up, that kind of stuff. And again, on a 1 to 10 scale, those are about a 5 or a 6, maybe a 7, but they're not a 9 or a 10. Okay?
Right. Thanks. I appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. And Steve, you're up next. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark. I've got a 1980, drove it up a lot, The I've had some work done on the engine recently by a Scottsdale repair shop, and they can't seem to fix some dripping leaks in the oil. And I'm wondering, is that pretty much common for an older car like this?
Okay, I missed.
Or do I just have a bad mechanic?
Well, what, I'm not going to comment. Tell me what the year, make, and model was again, because I missed that.
Sure, 1980 F-150.
Okay. Here's what's kind of important. As an engine gets older, it builds up internal pressure, and obviously that creates oil leaks. But the PCV valve is a vacuum cleaner for the pressure. So PCV positive crankcase ventilator. So the PCV valve plugs in on one side of the engine on the valve cover or at the back of the carburetor in your Ford probably. And then we have an air flow, and we have fresh air coming into the engine, and the PCV valve is on the other side of the engine. So clean air goes in. PCV valve is the vacuum cleaner. It sucks all the fuel molecules and all the trash out of the engine and sends it into the motor, and then it goes out the tailpipe. So if you have internal pressure because your PCV system is down or because somebody put a cork in the valve cover so we don't have fresh air going in anymore, then, yeah, that's going to cause all kinds of leaks. So I think you need a fresh pair of eyes. Are you talking about a Scottsdale shop you're at now? Don't say the name of the shop, but is that a Scottsdale shop?
It is.
Okay. Is it anywhere near Pima and McDowell?
No, it's in North Scottsdale.
Okay. I want to send you to Craig at Bell Automotive at the 101 in McDowell. He's on the north side of the road. It's like 8600 McDowell. Craig's an old guy. He's as smart as you get. His wife, Vicky, runs the front counter. This is going to be a piece of cake on a 1 to 10 scale. This is a 3 for him. And so the question is, I've got some oil leaks, and here's where they seem to be coming from, and would you just check for some of the reasons why? And Mark Salem said if you don't have a list of places to look, then call him. And then he'll call me and use bad words, but he won't do that in front of you, but it's okay because all my friends cuss at me. But
would you give me the name of that company again, please?
Sure. It's called Bell Automotive, B-E-L-L okay. Automotive, like 8600 okay. East McDowell, north side of the road. And
yeah,
and
you, Mark.
And remember, Pima's like, I think 88th Street. So
right. Yeah,
just,
you're right.
It's just west of that. Good luck to you.
Thank you, Mark.
Oh, you betcha. All righty, Brian, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hi, Mark. I've been going to ask you this, and I finally got a chance to call. About 40 years ago, I worked for a major agricultural equipment manufacturer selling parts on the road.
Okay.
And, of course, we sold oil, and the oil produced was by a company that did it, and they required it for the warranty of their engine, diesel engine. And when they sent the man out, they come often to do conferences and talks. He explained to us that when they developed multi-grade oil, such as NW30, 40, whatever, the W really didn't stand for weight. Now, what we're talking about with oil is viscosity, which makes sense. And he said the W stood for winter, so people, more of a marketing tool, so that people would know that they could drive their car from the north to Florida using the same oil. Have you ever heard of this, or is this just a fallacy?
No. That's exactly the rap in the 60s and the 70s and even into the 80s. It's exactly. That's what they told us. There's a couple of things. Number one, nobody knows what the hell W means. It can be winter. It can be Wisconsin. It can be. I've heard 100 different things. But it's. I believe it's a 10 weight slash 30. So a 10W. And the 10-30 means this. The oil will flow like a 10 weight when it's cold and a 30 weight when it's hot. So the properties, now the oil doesn't change viscosity. It just has a different flow characteristics. When we have two pieces, I'm doing this for everybody else. We have two pieces of metal that are rubbing one another really, really fast together. And in the middle of there is a hair, two thousandths. That's how.
Right.
So we need to get oil in and the oil will go through that joint, and it will carry the heat away. It'll provide lubrication, so it goes in and goes out. But there's a constant train of oil going through this rod bearing or this main bearing or this cam bearing. So we're flushing it. We're carrying the heat and the trash away. The oil goes around, goes back into the pan. It's sucked back up, and it goes through that joint again. That was all the way it was in the 60s and the 70s. You're right. What you said is that's the way it is. Back then, we had all kinds of oils. Most of it was snake oil, unless it had a brand like Texaco or Shell or Mobil or something like that. And then there was a whole lot of stuff going on where you could only use GM oil or you could only use Ford Motorcraft oil. None of that is true, and here's why. There's a Magnuson-Moss Act that's a law, and it says that if you dictate someone has to use your distilled water in their iron, then you must furnish that for free.
Oh, wow.
So that's called the Magnuson-Moss Act. So they cannot dictate what fuel you put in your car, what oil you put in your car. They can't do that. And if they do, they're just being
silly. So really, Mark, back in that day, they could have just as well said 10 viscosity 30, 10 viscosity 40, and we'd have 10B40 on our cans or bottles now.
It's just a matter of 10. It morphed from
10W. One minute.
It morphed from 10W30 to 10/30.
I'm getting picky, and I'm saying viscosity may be a more accurate way to describe how oil works than weight.
Well, you're going to confuse everybody when you start moving the words around. And that's the reason why all of us that have been trained, it flows alike. It has the characteristics of a 10 weight, which is sewing machine oil, by the way, consistency of water. Yeah. It has a 10 weight. It has the consistency of a 10 weight when it's cold because we don't want peanut butter in the engine when the motor's cold. But on the other hand, the 30 weight, it flows like a 30 weight when it's hot, and the 30 weight can go, get in the joint and carry the heat away. So it's all a matter of semantics, but it's you and I talking about it, and we've lost half of my audience, and it's because of you, Steve, that 50% of the people just hung up on this radio station. I'm teasing you.
I'm teasing you. I know.
Okay.
Okay, listen, thanks a lot, Mark.
Okay, thank you. All righty, and then, Brian, you stay there because you're going to be my first caller, but I got to take a break, and that means I have four lines open, 602-508-0960. So if you want to chime in, you got a question, you got a comment, 602-508-0960, and we'll be right back. When it comes to Sun City, there's only one shop in Sun City that I have thoroughly examined and can say to you that they're a good shop and they're owned by good people and they know the difference from right and wrong, and they've been in business since 1982. Chuck and I have been friends since 1968. He ran a gas station, and that was one of the gas stations I worked when I was in high school. So if you're looking for a good shop, then I recommend Automotive Dynamics. It's on the north side of Grand Avenue, just west of 99th Avenue, because I know the family, and I know they're honest, and I know they know how to fix your car. And if they don't, they'll raise their hand and tell you that. I can't fix your car. We need a fresh pair of eyes. That's something my shop says at least once a month. So we just sometimes, it's just beyond our capability, and we'll refer you to somebody who's better. But in Sun City, Auto Dynamics is my go-to shop. Let's go to the phones. Bob, thank you for holding. How can I help you?
Hi, Mark. Bob up in Payson. How are you doing today?
Good.
Hey, calling on behalf of my brother-in-law. He has a 2003 Dodge Ram 1500 with a 5.7 Hemi, 260,000 miles on it. Been running great. He pulled into a gas station last week, filled up a gas, restarted the vehicle, is very, very rough idle, would almost not accelerate. And I went down and I took a look at it, and he'd never changed the spark plugs, so we threw some spark plugs in it, which took us 8 hours. Didn't realize that these engines have 16 spark plugs.
Yeah, the days of $39.95 spark plugs, they were a long time ago.
Unbelievable. Anyway, you got any ideas that did not fix it? Very, very rough idle. Almost sounds mechanical in nature. It starts every time. Won't idle unless you give it gas, and then it doesn't accelerate very well.
Okay. Well, I'm up here in Payson right now. You know that I'm back and forth a lot, but I'm transmitting from the studio in Payson.
Okay.
I'm going to tell you that, then this is between you and me, okay? I've been up here since 2009. I've looked at a lot of repair orders. There's a big contingent of retired policemen and military guys up here that I am part of their friendship. And so I get to look at their repair bills. There's two shops in Payson that I recommend on a regular basis. The first one is Coyote Automotive, Dan.
Good.
And Dan does my mother-in-law's Suburban, and she lives here as well. And the other day, Dan waved his magic wand on a couple of door modes, and I thought it would be three times that much money, and he fixed it for one-third of what I thought it would be. And so, and the other one is Miller Automotive. And the two of them are on Main Street. They're both honest. They're both dependable. And I want to tell you, and I'll tell everybody else because I don't care, there's a couple of real bandits in Payson. And there are people that don't know what they're doing, and there's people that are telling people lies. And, you know, once you use synthetic, then you have to use synthetic for the rest of your life, and your tires are timing. It's not a 10-year timeout. It's really a 7-year timeout. You know, that kind of stuff drives me crazy. It wads up my panties. My voice gets real high, and I just get really mad. But
okay, I neglected to say he's in Mesa.
Oh, okay. Then you're going to have to go to Thompson's Auto Body. Or Thompson's Auto Repair on Mesa and Stapley and Main Street. Thompson's Auto Repair. Tell Brian and Thelma, Mark Salem says you don't have a prayer in hell of fixing this thing, but they can and they will, and they're very good. It's the only shop in Mesa I can recommend.
Does it sound electronic to you?
You know, it doesn't. It's the 260,000 miles and a timing chain that has jumped a tooth. I'd be willing to say I'm probably 25% of the time right. And I'm thinking that backfiring, running rough, lots of engine clatter, you alluded to a mechanical issue, 260,000
yep.
miles. So this truck has been around the world five times. And so the first yep. thing I would do is I would, does it have a distributor in it? I think it does, doesn't it? Yeah.
I don't think so, and I think it has an electronic throttle, too.
Okay. I think it does. You said it's an 03, so I think it has a distributor in it. But but you replaced 12. They did spark plugs times 2? Is that what you said?
16.
Yeah.
16 spark okay. times 8. 2 times 8.
All right. Well, one of the things I'd do is if it has the distributor, I'd take the cap off and I'd put a big breaker bar on the front crankshaft and I'd lift it up and push it down and lift it up and push it down. And if there's a heck of a delay every time I do that, then the chain's jumped a tooth. The chain is real bad. And you do a timing chain first and hope like heck that you didn't bend all the valves. So
well,
this could be a big dog repair bill, but it may not be. Will it even run at all?
Yeah, it starts and runs every time, but he has to keep his foot on the accelerator pedal to keep it idling or else it'll quit.
Okay, now can he hold a steady idle and have it zzzz? Can he do that?
He can hold a steady idle.
Okay, that's good news. Because he couldn't hold a steady idle if the timing chain had slipped a tooth or two because the engine vacuum would be all fouled up. So the fact that he can hold a steady idle is a good thing. That's a good thing. It's spark or fuel. There's going to be no question it's spark or fuel. Or there's a big, huge vacuum leak on there because you guys had 16 spark plugs to replace and you left some vacuum line off, which causes a hissing noise, which causes a rough idle and causes the car's inability to idle at all. So I don't know, but I don't think, but I'm a little bit worried about the motor noise, and that's why I'm jumping to the timing chain. So
yeah, that's what we're kind of thinking. We're thinking timing chain and or a drop valve.
The drop valve is going to bring the motor to a stop. It ain't going to run no more. Because when you if you drop a valve, you're going to blow it up in the cylinder, and the piston's going to come apart. Now you're going to have oil up into the spark plug area. You're going to have a hell of a noise, and you're going to have so much blow-by and stuff like that. Every time the piston goes up, all that compression goes into the crankshaft, and we're blowing oil out of the valve covers. We're pulling it out of the PCV valve. You got all kinds of calamities going on. So I'm not thinking a dropped valve is going to be the problem, but God knows.
Well, it doesn't sound like an air mass flow sensor.
No, no. No. No.
Okay.
No.
Okay, very good, right, sir.
Good. Hey, and do me a favor. If you do fix it out, fix it, or somebody fixes it, then call me and let me know so I can learn from that, okay?
Thank you. We'll see you later.
Okay. Thank you, Bob. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. And we have another caller. Who might that be?
Hey, good morning to Mike.
Mike, good morning.
Yes, good morning, Mark. I have a Ford F-150 2008, a 5.4 V8 engine. It's got 194,000 on it. And I've noticed just recently it started getting a vibration. It's not so much when it's in park, but as I go down the road, it vibrates more. Now, say, for instance, I'm coming up to a stoplight and I take my foot off the gas, it quits vibrating. Now, the other day, I was working on a neighbor's dirt front yard, and I was towing a piece of metal, only weighed a couple hundred pounds, and I'd pull it past where the ruts were, and then I'd disconnect that from the tow hitch, and then I'd pull up further where the driveway was wider. I'd put it in reverse to turn around, and when I'd put it in the drive, the engine would just idle down and stop, and it did that three times. Now, I also noticed that the tachometer, when this vibration and stuff is going on, it doesn't keep going fast
okay.
and slow.
I can't help you because there's way too many moving parts here, but I can tell you this much. Guys my age can just drive it and tell you what's the matter with it. So did we lose a harmonic balance, or did we lose a couple of cylinders? Is the torque converter acting up? I would suggest that you drive it around in first gear as you're moving that stuff around and see if that makes any difference. See if a different gear change in the transmission where you hold it in first, hold it in second, hold it in third, see if that makes any difference. The torque converter is not going to be a part of the vibration, although it could be because it could be bad, but the torque converter doesn't really activate until 45, 55 miles an hour, and you're talking about low-speed operation up until then. But the torque converter could have come apart, and that would cause a vibration, but what bothers me so much is the fact that you have a vibration, and when you give it gas, it goes away. That's what's bothering me. Got to go. We'll be back. That's what happens. Okay, I've got Will, and I've got open lines available, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. I want to talk to Mike. He had that F-150 2008, and he had a vibration. Mike, there's the top 25% of our industry only wants to drive that truck. We just want to feel the vibration. We want to put it in different gears. We want to go fast. We want to go slow. We want to see if it's power steering related, transmission related, gear differential related, if it's movement related, if it'll make it happen when it's there. And then we're going to check the fluid. We're going to look at the codes on the computer. We're going to look to make sure that the command is right and the torque converter's locking up and all that kind of stuff. So there's going to be a diagnostic charge associated with this. And so I don't want to misrepresent the diagnostic charge where we just get in and we feel the vibration and we're done, because that's just the beginning. We have to decide how we can make it come and go. And then we also have to identify the source of it. And included in that is checking the fluids and codes and all that other kind of stuff. So it's just not that hard of a job to do. You just need to find somebody who's been around a while, and preferably somebody like an ASE master that's been in the business for 15 years or something like that. And those are the well-seasoned guys that really do know a whole lot about that. And so that's the easiest way to handle it. Let's go to Will. Will, thank you for holding. How can I help you?
Yes, hi, Mark. I've been listening to you for a long time, and I appreciate all the advice you give us. I really appreciate it. I think it was last week you had like a little chiropractic adjustment you did for this guy's transmission, kind of rocking a little bit. I thought that stuff is just priceless, you know. It's just unbelievable. Okay, my question for you today is I'm trying to help my 20-year-old grandson. He wants to become an auto mechanic. We live up in the Prescott area.
Okay.
So he's signed up for the local community college, which is a good college, and he's going to start, you know. And I was just wondering, like, what did your son do and your daughter do, and what are guys doing nowadays to break into the auto mechanic field?
Well, he's going to start at the local community college and take some auto mechanics classes.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
That's a good place to start. I'm not a fan of the two very large schools in town that puts them in a debt load of somewhere between $20,000 and $50,000. I'm not a fan of that. I think what he does is once he determines, you know, what part of the cart he wants to work on, or if he wants to be a general repair technician, which is where I started and a whole lot of my friends started, then he gets a job at an oil change facility. But what's the real key is he needs to move around, not every month, he needs to move maybe once or twice a year. He can go to Discount Tire and he can work there and he learns everything there is to know about tires and vibration and application and load range and inflation. And then from there he goes to a quick lube facility and he learns how to change oil on everything. And he learns how to check all the fluids, the belts, the hoses, the tires. He learns how to find out where the inflation for the tires is written on the truck, so that he can do that. And from that point, after he gets well versed in tires and oil changes and stuff like that, and the ability to service the transmission, service the differential, the transfer cases and all that kind of stuff, then he'll go into a general repair shop and he'll be what we call an LOF guy. He's going to do all the oil changes. Well, those of us are smart enough to know that those kinds of young men and women are going to be next to a very seasoned, very cranky, very gray-headed SOB. And we're going to tell the SOB, be nice to the kid next door. And when you find something really special, bring him over and show him what you're doing. Well, that becomes a bond, and it has for our shop for hundreds of years. I say hundreds. For many years. And the guys will take the young kid and they'll just say, I want him in the bay next to me. We want three bays between us. I want bay two, and we're going to have three as a wild card, and then he's going to be in bay four. And we're going to work together, and I'm going to train him as we go along. That's the very best thing he could hope for. And if he wants to apply for shops that follow that training process, go to marksalem.com and look at all the shops I have that I say are really good shops. All of us are ones that would be happy to have him take a community college class, maybe even attempt an oil change kind of ASE certification test and maybe pass it. And that's where you start. Again, Discount Tire is a good place. Walmart's a good place. Quick Lubes are a good place. Alignment shops are a good place. And he's going to get a real good fundamental knowledge. But he's going to ultimately decide where he wants to be. He wants to be a tune-up tech. He wants to be a front-end guy. He wants to be a drivetrain guy, engine, transmission, transfer case, and differential. He'll find his niche, and then once he does that, then he'll be fine. We have, I don't know how many techs we have, 10 or 12 techs. Each one of them has a skill, but there's a lot of them are master techs, which means they've passed all the 8 automotive tests, and these guys are bumper to bumper. But every once in a while they'll talk to one another just because they want a fresh pair of eyes. And the master techs are the guys that are out there that are making $50,000 to $100,000 a year. And so I think that's what his target's probably going to be.
Okay. Well, thank you, sir, and you have a happy new year.
And thank you, Will. Thank you very much. 602-508-0960. I think the lines are wide open. 602-508-0960. There's 5 of them. I got to take a break. Be back in about 3 minutes. When it comes to car repair shops, Kurtz Auto's been on our list for 10 or more years. And I have a core group of people that's on my list. And I'm proud to tell you that I know I'm tempting fate here. I haven't been involved in a customer complaint on a shop on my list in the last 5 years. So I every once in a while I do get involved, and usually we bring it to a conclusion. And the shop's a little unhappy and the customer's a little unhappy or something like that, but we work hard. But Kurtz Automotive, I don't think I've ever had a complaint on Kurtz. He's at I-17 in Bell Road. He has ASE certified technicians, both gas and diesel. He works on all kinds of domestic and import vehicles, and they're really good, and I think they do something that we actually copied ourselves. If you bring in a car that we just know we're not the best car guy at, then we'll tell you who is. So, like, a lot of us will do maintenance on a Saab, but when it comes to a check engine light, or it comes when I turn on the radio, the air conditioning goes away, we're going to send you to somebody who just deals in Saabs. But Kurtz Automotive, good guy, I-17 in Bell, you live in that area, he's a good guy. Let's go to Ken. Ken, thank you for holding. How can I help you?
So, I have a question regarding a four-wheel drive vehicle. The front hub looks like someone took a sledgehammer to the rim of it and put it a bit out of round. to the point where the rotor doesn't exactly sit flat against the hub.
Okay.
And I'm curious to know, like, two things. One is that, I mean, there is a slight vibration when driving the vehicle. And, I mean, that could be from that. It could be just from some other, you know, issue in the newer tires. One also lead to where the three bolts that hold it in at 75 foot-pounds of torque can actually all three get loose.
Well, you got, if you've got something bent on the front end, you have to go in and fix it.
I know. It's kind of a bit of a dispute. It was actually warranty.
Okay.
And you know, they're fixing axle seals, and there are several things that had gone wrong. The bolts had come loose from the hub. It caused the wheel to tuck under a little bit, which caused the. And I had done the brakes recently. I use only OEM parts.
Okay. Well, I'm obligated to jump in and tell you I don't use OEM parts. There is no such thing as an OEM part. Everything that's sold at the dealership can be sold at, and it has different stuff in it. So when you do that, you lose my attention, and it causes tremendous anxiety for me because it starts a whole new conversation on the internet again, and everybody wants to fight about whether I put GM and or Ford. If you have a problem with a shop and you think that you've been treated unfairly, then I want you to file a nice complaint with the Better Business Bureau Auto Advisory Committee. It's a committee that I founded years and years ago. I'm not on the committee, but I was one of the founders. It's a very fair committee, and they're going to ask for all your records, and they're going to ask the shop to comment, and then they're going to make a decision. And if the shop's a member of the Better Business Bureau, he's agreed to abiding by the decision. That's the easiest way. It's cheap. It's free. And it's the easiest way to get this whole thing issued. But you've already said that you've been involved in some of the repair. You've done this or you've done that, and they did this and they did that. And I'm paraphrasing. So make sure you tell all of that because it's important for the big picture. It doesn't going to hurt you by saying that, but just make sure you tell that. And that's what I would do if I were you. But I can't possibly... I can't possibly go over your complaint through your eyes on the radio. I need to, I would need to see the whole thing, and that's not something that I do anymore. But anyway, Ken, good luck to you. Better Business Bureau Auto Advisory Committee. John, you're up next. How can I help you?
I have a 2018 Silverado, and pulling my trailer, I was hit in the rear end, and it ended up bending the frame on the Silverado in the back.
Okay.
Do I need to seek out any specialists, or what kind of problems can I expect?
Well, who's going to fix the damage?
Well, I already went to the insurance company and to their place, and they were kind of, saying, well, we may be able to fix it, and that's something, and bending it back. But they seemed a little tentative that actually there might be a problem, and it may not be able to be fixed, so I just was...
Well, you're asking a question that can't be answered. That's the problem. No one knows whether we're going to have to replace the frame rail or if we can get it back in line until we try to get it back in line and until we get it up in the air and we strip off all the stuff that's hiding the frame and all that other kind of stuff. So it's we can put it on an alignment on a four-wheel alignment machine, and we can tell you that the right front tire is an inch in front of the left front tire, which means that the right rear corner of the frame was driven forward. But then we have frame racks that we put it on, we strap it down with chains, and then we pull everything back. So, I mean, today when you fix a frame compared to years ago, it's the difference between Windows and DOS. So we have equipment in the body shop world that's very simple to operate. It's very technical. You strap the car down. You air up all the tires the same. You take a bunch of readings off of each of the four wheels. And then it's like a big chiropractic bench. You pull here and snap it here, and you pull here and you snap it here. This isn't that big of a deal. But it's not okay. Something you should be involved in. But you make sure that whoever you take it to has the ability to straighten and or replace a frame rail and get all four corners square. That's an important consideration, because what happens is somebody takes it in, they fix it, or at least they think they fix it, they give it to you, it's not right, you take it to a frame shop, they go, no, this thing's 4 inches out. Now that is a heck of a mess, and you don't want to be involved in that. So you just one place does all the work, and just talk to the insurance adjusters, because the insurance adjusters knows who's the good guys are in the paint and body shop world. I would follow their advice. Does that help you?
Sure does. Thanks.
Okay. All right. Good luck to you, John. Don, you're up next. Hey, Don. Don, can you talk to me, Don?
Hey, buddy, how you doing?
Hey, good, good. Can you turn down your radio there in the background? Go ahead. Thank you. What's up?
Yeah, I did.
Okay.
I did. Hey, on my 03 Buick LeSabre, 3.8 Series 2, started it up. Let's open up the crank filler and see what's going on, because I drove it to a place and I looked, there's a puddle underneath, but I had the heater going. Of course, I didn't think it, I forgot that the AC runs when the heater goes too. So I've got Milky in the top of the motor, and I'm going, okay, does it need an upper plenum? My stepson's a GM tech, and I'm just wondering if I should get a hold of him and let him look at it, even though it doesn't work anymore because of his prones.
So you basically, you have water inside the engine.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I know it's not a head gasket because it's never overheated.
Well, that doesn't mean anything. I don't know that I'd make that bet if
that's
I were
true.
You. I think what you the first thing anybody's going to do is they're going to put a pressure tester on it, and they're going to go find the leak. And so if it's inside the engine, we drain the oil. We fill it up with water.
Yeah, and I had some issues earlier. We replaced both of those little L things in the front of the motor.
Okay, but what I'm saying is the diagnostic process is drain the oil and leave the drain plug out of it, fill it up with water, put a pressure tester on it, and find the leak. And if it's coming out of the drain plug hole in the oil pan, then the leak is inside the motor. And somebody's going to have to take the head off to figure out where it's leaking from, or the timing cover. And so, but if it's not, if it's an external leak, then you'll see it external. So do you have a pressure tester you can use?
I think Ken's got one. I'm not really sure.
Okay.
I thought I'd get one from AutoZone.
Yeah, you can rent them from AutoZone. But, yeah, fill it up with water, drain the oil, take the drain plug out of it, pressure test it. The cap says 13 pounds. I want you to put 14 in it. Walk away, come back, look underneath it, and you'll find where the leak's at if it comes out of the drain plug hole.
It was full of coolant last night. It was full of coolant last night, and I put some water in the reserve bottle.
Okay, but none of that makes any difference in the testing and the diagnostic procedure. No one cares. We're trying to find out where the leak's at, and if you want to find out what the leak's at, then you have to do some version of what I've just suggested to you.
The upper intake, what I'm thinking, but it's been changed once in that motor. So
okay, is there water that runs through the upper intake?
Oh yeah, on that 3.8, you bet.
Okay. Okay. Well, like I said, where's that water going to end up? It's going to end up the spark plug holes, right? So to pressure test it, take all the spark plugs out of it, pressure test it, wait till the gauge falls to zero, and then have your wife stand there right in front of those spark plug holes and crank the motor over, and when you cover her with brown water, she'll be really happy with you, but at least you'll know that it's the end.
I can't do that anymore. I can't do that anymore. She passed away in October, unfortunately.
I'm sorry. That was an inappropriate joke. I'm sorry.
Oh, I know.
But that's if you.
I'll get my stepdaughter to do it. But
no.
She'll stand there for 2 seconds when she gets wet.
No, Don, we're not. I'm sorry to hear about your wife. I'm sorry.
Right. Thank you.
All righty, Don.
But tell Renee and you guys have a happy New Year.
And same to you, Don. Thank you very much. Don and I go back 20, 30 years, and he's driven a tow truck, and he's one of those guys that no matter what you put down in front of him or behind him, he can tow it. He doesn't care if it's a combine. He doesn't care if it's a tractor. He doesn't care if it's an airplane. He doesn't care whatever. He just has the skill level to haul whatever you want him to haul. And I remember talking to him at one time, and he actually took an airplane, and they took the wings off, and he hauled the fuselage and the two wings from one place to the other and was able to do it without damaging everything. So he's been around the block a few times, but he handles big vehicles and motorhomes just quite well. Anyway, my name is Mark Salem, and if you want to get a hold of me, you can mark@marksalem.com. Mark is with a K, M-A-R-K. Salem is like the cigarette, S-A-L-E-M.com. and send me and tell me your make and model and just give me a quick synopsis of what the situation is. I have a water leak. This is what happened, and this is where I see water leaking and that kind of stuff. If I call you back, and I usually do, but I'll send you an email and say, hey, what day's good or what time is good? I wake up at 4 to feed horses, and I go to bed at 10:30. So somewhere in that area, I'll call with my cell phone, but it's going to be a blocked number. And when you answer, I'm going to say, this is Mark Salem. I'm returning your call about your car problem. That's the first thing that comes out of my mouth, and that way you'll not hang up on me. So Mark at MarkSalem.com. You can go to MarkSalem.com and look at, and we have a list of shops that are available. We have a list of FAQs that I've developed over the last 30 years. So all the car questions we've covered today have all been, we have FAQs that address those issues. So it's a conglomeration of, we've been doing radio in the Valley since 1988. And so that we've kept track of all that. And I have the show sheets from every radio show I've ever done. For instance, this today, John was my first caller, then Jane, Tom, Dan, Jack, Stan, Steve, and I have, Dan had a 77 440 Dodge, and I turned him over to Harker's Automotive because that's where he came from anyway. And then Tom had a high idle 3.6, and I told him to go to Simmons in Tucson. So I keep all those show sheets so that I know what I said and what they said to me. And you can also email me, like I said, mark@marksalem.com. We don't have any callers on the line, right?
Lines are open.
Okay. And one of the things that is happening right now is there's just a whole lot of salesmanship going on right now. And when you take your car in, and it can be a quick lube facility, it can be a Walmart kind of place, it can be an independent repair shop like mine, it can be a dealership, it can be a specialty shop. Our auto repair industry has at least 10 categories. There are problem shops in every category, but the common denominator is you took it in for a 1995 oil change, and you know and I know that that's a really cheap oil change, and you took it in there, and lo and behold, you get an estimate from them of that you need $888 worth of work. You just take the list, ask them questions, write down notes, say thank you, make sure that the estimates are complete, and say thank you and leave. That's what you do. And that'll give you an opportunity to look at it and say,
1 minute.
Wait a minute. He's got a fuel injection flush here for $200. What is that for? What is that going to fix? And he says, oh, you need to do that every 50,000 miles. Then you say, well, let me get my owner's manual out, and would you show me where it says that? And unfortunately, it doesn't say that. But that's how you protect yourself. That's called self-defense for car expense. You just protect yourself. Know what to say and what to do. The default is, listen, you've told me a lot of information. Could I get you to write it down on my work order for me? I'll just sit in the lobby if you'll just type it out, because I have a bad memory. And if you just write all that out for me, I'd appreciate it. If they're pulling your leg and if they're telling you something that isn't true, they aren't going to do that. They're smarter than that. They're not going to tell you your scuculator valve is bad and that that's a $2,200 repair. They're not going to tell you that because there's no such thing as a scuculator valve. So those are the self-defense for car expense. It's something that we've talked about forever. I'll see you next Saturday right here on KKNT.